Welcome to Thundercast, ThunderTech's podcast where we give you our take on what's new in marketing, what's cool, what's lame, and why you should care.
All right. Everybody ready? Hello and welcome back to Thundercast, ThunderTech's regular podcast. I'm your host, Craig Israel. I'm joined today with our president, Jason Therrien.
Howdy.
And a very special in-studio guest. We have Mike Connolly, Vice President Digital for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Oh, thanks for having me, gentlemen. Of
course. So, Mike, it's been a crazy year for you. I mean, obviously, Cavs finally brought a championship back to Cleveland. It got less press is that the Lake Erie Monsters also won the American Hockey League their championship. And what many people might not know is that you were also involved with the RNC, co-chair Digital Tools, along with our own Jason Therrien.
That was the rumor, yeah.
It was a slightly busy year across the board, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. What a monumental year to be in Cleveland and to be a part of this groundswell of, you know, the rebirth of what Cleveland is as a city. So it's been really special to be a part of it.
And a new addition to the family this year, right?
Four kids strong.
Yeah. So, wow. Yeah, one busy year.
Yep. Your team. So we could talk about RNC, I'm sure, for 20 minutes or longer all by itself. But today let's focus on sports, right? What you have been doing for the Cavs and the larger house of brands. But let's start with a little bit of an introduction. VP Digital, what's that mean? What's your day-to-day?
You mean you can't decipher what I do in my role by that?
No,
you
know, not
by
at that all. Title?
Yeah, it's, digital in general, if you think about kind of the overall growth of what that has meant to business, the title and the terms have kind of remained the same as digital, but it's now impacting so many different areas of the business, you know, whether it be marketing, whether it be partnerships, whether it be ticket sales, all the way down to operations. So the idea of digital really is more about an all-encompassing service type of role within the organization that helps all the different business units succeed within their digital space. So, one day I may be wearing a hat that focuses on marketing. And the other day I may be wearing a hat that's, tied to emerging technology. And then I could be turned around and literally in front of a partner putting a pitch together and presenting kind of all of our future assets and what we can bring to the partnership space. So it's great because it doesn't become predictable. And that's what I really like about it. And the ability to have the creativity within the digital landscape where you have that blank canvas where anything's possible and the merging of these mediums. You've got TV and radio and prints, what that was now in the digital space. So, I mean, the ability to accomplish kind of anything is what was always appealing to me. And then getting into that role with the Cavaliers, my background was really rooted in sports. I'm almost 20 years strong now, but I was more on the media side. Working with the Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com, Advanced Internet, eventually going into Fox Sports. So my perception was always on the covering the team side, not necessarily being on the team side. So when I did join the team, I thought I was going from having a responsibility of 30 websites across the country to focusing on one team in one place. Boy, was it.
So it'll be easy.
Kickwalk, right?
I'll be, it'll be taking a step back. But, getting into to the role, it quickly became apparent that, those responsibilities are consistent regardless of where you're at because it is such a fast-growing space and medium right now that the demands continue to grow year over year. But what is really exciting and, I think that makes me very proud now through three seasons is just watching the growth of the digital team in general. People that, in their roles and how they're fitting into the bigger picture of the organization. Content has become such an important element within our sales strategies and our partnership platforms. And that is kind of a deviation from the past, right? And you think about marketing, traditional sports marketing or traditional sports sales. A lot of people call it spots and dots where, hey, you're not really buying the partnership, you're buying the hospitality. But now we're bringing solutions to partners and truly going through a needs analysis process that's building out platforms that can impact their business. And that part, to me, is always the most gratifying, right? When you can listen to a partner, you can get their feedback, you can take it back to a great group of individuals that have great creative ideas and then watch that build and then come to fruition and activate and then watch the partner be happy about it, right? We're delivering ROI now, not just through, you know, those impressions that come up in our LED signage. So that part has really been exciting, but, you know, there's still a lot to be done. You know, there's always a lot that's around the corner.
So talk a little. So Mike, clients of ThunderTech, listeners of the ThunderCast podcast, you know, they're all going through what I think you're probably going through in terms of how you build, refine, and evolve a team. Right. So it's not just your responsibilities and the tactics you're kicking out every day. It's also that, you know, the mechanics of a team and how you get that to work and evolve. Can you give a quick snapshot of what your team looks like and how you go to market with them and how also you're evolving that?
Absolutely. You know, and I thank you for bringing up that topic, because that is one that I think is a real focus of a lot of people that are in similar roles across multiple industries. And, you know, my first 2 years with the organization was really about trying to take a step back, look at the operational responsibilities of the team, identifying the strengths of the team, and then figuring out ways to become more efficient, right? As the demands on the digital team continue to grow, we quickly realized that we had to, you know, kind of restructure in order to be able to support the organization. So with me coming from a product background in my previous life and being trained really on an agile methodology that focuses on sprint planning, and it really is just a means to try to structure and prioritize projects that are coming in, we went through kind of an agile transformation during last off season. And I know the team was a little apprehensive at first, you know, trying to see how that would come to fruition. But what was really helpful for the team is separating content and production into their own kind of separate arms. Now, there's a lot of carryover there, don't get me wrong, but our production team can focus on moving the platforms forward and do that in a way in which they're protected, where they're not getting all these ad hoc requests that are coming in and spinning the wheels trying to figure out what gets done and when. I mean, it's very straightforward. Now, we got a backlog. We prioritize the backlog. We are fully transparent with the people on what we're working on. We put ownership into other business units to become product owners, and they have to handle the prioritization of their products and their platforms. And what that's allowed us to do is literally see the growth iteratively over time to be able to meet the demands of the organization. All the while, on the content side, we're still delivering the expected experience that our fans have online. You know, and a lot of people would think, all right, digital is Cavs.com. You know, it's a mobile app and that's it. Well, no, that's it goes much, you know, much more beyond that. And, you know, maybe to my fault, you know, I'm a bigger fan of kind of having a little bit more, you know, in-house resources to be nimble and fluid and not so dependent on vendors over time. Not to say that the vendors aren't an important part of the equation, but quickly realized that we were kind of like in this, you know, potpourri of vendor chaos when I first came in, and we had to start to identify, hey, where are the ones we need to stay the course with, and what can we start to bring in-house? And then I would have to analyze, okay, is it more beneficial to invest into a headcount, you know, that we got to pay 401k and insurance on versus trying to outsource that, and or even look at like a contractor or somebody as a casual employee. So luckily, the organization, our ownership as a whole, was a firm believer in investing and building that, because that core group is going to be so important as the business continues to grow over the year and the dependency on technology becomes even greater than it is now. So fast forward to this year, we've got a full season under our belt of kind of being in that new structure where, you know, our production team, we've got a scrum master, you know, somebody that kind of manages everything that's coming in, handles priorities, communicates with the product owners within the organization, and then our development team can develop. Right, that's their job. Their job is to go in and to take a job out of the backlog, you know, that's part of that sprint, and say, all right, you know, I'm knocking this out today and putting it in and logging everything. And now from a team lead, I have the ability to go in and really be able to provide some up-to-the-minute reports on where we're at within that process and the progress. And I think what that's done is that's helped build confidence in the organization and what we can bring to the table. All the while we're still doing the same things that were expected of us day to day, but a lot more custom development in-house. When you're thinking about, you know, an org chart within a sports organization, solutions architect isn't something that comes to mind immediately, especially within a digital team. Maybe under an IT department, but you know, the structure, the traditional structure of sports organizations have been very traditional for a long period of time, and now we're starting to see the evolution of those more non-traditional roles starting to creep in. And not only non-traditional, but high-paying roles. You know, you don't go out and find a solutions architect on the corner, you know, and they're not a dime a dozen. And to find the right one is really the challenge. So, and then more importantly, getting them acclimated to the organization and the needs. But going into that investment and kind of structuring that way has allowed us really to make some great advancements on our, you know, on our long-term data, you know, platforms. We are now in the midst of, we're probably about 65% complete on our data warehouse project, which has been a big, you know, a big ongoing project for several years now. But and it will continue to be an ongoing project that doesn't stop when it's done. So, you know, long story short, it's great to have a team like that where you have all of these great skill sets, but you have to be very mindful of how you manage those skill sets. Because, you know, a traditional online writer and a solutions architect really come from two very, very different worlds. Yes. But they're in this world, they are dependent and very important on, you know, on each other in a way that, you know, that writer brings the fans to the site, right? And the fans that are coming to the site, we want to be better understanding what their actions are, you know, what their preferences are. And that solution architect needs to take that, you know, that fan profile that has been pulled in from our content team and really start to model that in a way that becomes actionable. So while on the outside, on the periphery, there may not seem to be a lot of synergies between roles, it's paramount that all those you know, unique roles come together for the common goal of trying to move, you know, move the business forward.
So, Mike, you've mentioned content quite a bit, and through our own experiences and through some of our discussions with other thought leaders in industry, we know that content marketing isn't a this season or next season play. It's months, years in development. How have you dealt with that as an organization?
Especially as a sports organization, yeah. Right, where it's game by game, season by season, so...
Game by game, season by season, but you know, a lot of the other hurdles are there are a lot of restrictions around content because of the amount of money that is invested into TV deals and rights deals within sports that you have to be able to maneuver around. So you know, content marketing is, it's central to what we do now. From the partnership side, our largest partnerships are centered around content marketing platforms. And more we're seeing brands that want to align themselves with sports organizations in a very genuine, authentic way. And in that process, we need to understand what are your business objectives, what are your business goals, how do you define ROI before we even step foot into trying to define a platform for them. Where do you want to focus on your area of growth? Are you looking at social media? Do you want to try to grow more hits to your website? Do you, you know, are you looking to, you know, take people that are focused in the sports world and educate them on a product that, you know, may be the complete antithesis of what sports is, right? So trying to center around and really focus on what those goals are allow us to really define platforms that have that longevity over time. And not everyone works. I think everybody realizes that, right? You know, content is... is the beauty of content is in the eye of the beholder or the reader for that matter. And you know, we've tried very, very hard over the years to make that great connection between brand and team. So a couple good examples of that, you know, we started off you know, Roto-Rooter. So it's a popular mainstream brand, and they came to us and said,
natural
hey,
fit.
Yeah, natural fit, Roto-Rooter and basketball, right? You know, you've got two brands, yes. Iconic brands that just align themselves together
plumbing
perfectly.
And yes, drainage, yeah.
So their objective was, hey, we want to take advantage of the reach that you have on social media, and we want to try and grow our awareness via social media around the Roto-Rooter brand. And okay, so you know, I sat through and did the needs analysis with the partner, and sat with our business development team on the partnership side, and you know, took all of those great notes that we had back to our digital team. And here's a good example of you know, kind of breaking that traditional mold, where you've got a medley of people now in a variety of different roles doing green light thinking, coming up with concepts and ideas that there is no wrong idea. We're throwing it all on the board and we're collaborating to come up with these concepts. So long story short, you know, we ended up defining a social platform for them called Drained It. You know, it it was that eureka moment when we heard that pop up. We said, oh my gosh, that's great. That's brilliant. So the idea of a drained-it hashtag, they can kind of track their, you know, the amount of engagement that was taking place there. It allowed us to kind of own the category that was tied to it. And we used prime opportunities throughout the course of the game and the season to highlight those posts. And what was really, really important, and it was not only in the concept, but it was in the tactic in which we published that content, right? So if we publish that content at the wrong time, say we're losing by 10. Oh, we just drained a big shot. Yeah, but we still stink. You know, I mean, the fickle nature of social will let you know right away whether you hit it on the head or you didn't, right? So, you know, knowing when that right time was to post it, to get that right reaction, to make sure the sentiment that was tied to that was strong, you know, and doing that over time, you know, the fans became to appreciate and expect that, right? Oh, it's a drained-it moment. Is that the drained-it moment? So the conversation starts to come out and becomes its own platform that, you know, the earned media value that's tied to that is that golden nugget that everybody looks for. So, you know, we figured out a way to make Roto-Rooter work, and I was very proud of the team to kind of walk away from that. You know, another good example before we, I think, jump forward, and this was one of the first really successful platforms we had. So Cleveland Clinic is a very big partner of ours, and one of the first things I did, they were the first partner I went and met with when I joined the team, and what I wanted to do was get an understanding for where they were heading. I was told that, hey, they want to focus more on digital, they don't want just banner ads, and so I sat down, and they were really focused on pushing people to their Health Hub blog. At that point, it was called Health Hub. The idea of trying to get people there, and it was more about healthy lifestyle as opposed to this is what we're doing to cure patients, right? It was just a awareness, eat these five things, do these stretches before you run. So there was a really good natural fit there. But what we needed to find out was how do we build a platform that leverages the loyalty and the equity that is in the Cavs, you know, and the players for the Cavs, into a natural way to drive people over there. So, again, a social platform that also lived online was we would get a great quote from a player, a trainer, a coach that talked about, you know, when we go on the road, I make sure that I get, you know, at least 7 hours of sleep at night, you know, whatever it may be. Find out more information about the importance of sleep, you know, in the Cleveland Clinic's Health Hub blog. So the natural engagement there that was taking place on social was tied to the player and the loyalty to that player and the organization. And the click-through was delivering to expand on, you know, information or knowledge and what you're going to need to get the right amount of sleep. So it was a perfect kind of combination. And when we jumped into it to start, we thought, all right, let's see how this works. 3 years later, it's their most successful sports platform from a marketing perspective that they have. So it's continuing to grow strong. So it's been...
That's great.
Yeah, it's been fun.
So before we wrap up, I want to touch on, you know, as VP Digital, you're doing all these digital things. A lot of what we've talked about is stuff that exists today, right? You're doing it well, but it's not really groundbreaking, but you are looking at the next platform, right? The next way that you'll be connecting with fans and partners. Can you talk a little bit about those kind of things you're exploring?
Yeah, and that's, you know, you think about, you know, the nature of sports, it's so fast-paced, right? You're really thinking event to event to event. And we call it, you know, in our organization, we have to take the time to work on our business, not just in our business, right? And then it's taking a step back, looking at your big rocks and understanding, okay, while we're here and we're successful here, how do we ensure we're setting ourselves up for success in the future? And a lot of that now is aligning yourself with the right technology that is going to allow you to kind of have that sexy, you know, brand that has the popularity that other partners and folks want to align themselves with. So a good example of that, this past start of this past playoffs, we've got a great partnership with Anheuser-Busch, Budweiser, Bud Light. You know, they've got a variety of brands that kind of fall under their umbrella. But their goal was to bring Budweiser to a younger audience. They wanted, you know, their market research showed that millennials have never even tasted Budweiser before, and they wanted them to have an experience or at least associate with the Budweiser brand for consideration. And they wanted to do that in a means in which was experiential. Right, so they figured if there was a good experience that was had at the Cavs game with Budweiser a part of it, naturally that would become a potential the next time they go in to buy a six-pack inside the store or whatever it may be. They wanted to be aggressive in the VR space, so 360 video. And they felt that that was a great opportunity to try to engage the younger audience. And we collaborated on a partnership where they created the VR viewers or the Google Cardboard viewers for the content, and we in turn created the content in which went inside of that. Hosted it on our app, so it was native to our mobile app, which was the first in sports, leveraging the Google Cardboard SDK and the integration. So I'll be the first to say, before we committed to doing that before actually exploring or really jumping into the VR space to understand. I mean, I did a lot of research, don't get me wrong, in understanding, okay, here's the right platforms, here's the editing software you're going to need, here's the camera rig and the hardware.
It is very fresh.
I mean, it's still the Wild West.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, there's a lot of hype, which the hype is interesting to talk about, but...
Oh, my God. Well,
substance.
You know, and fortunate or unfortunately, whichever way you look at it, I took the personal responsibility of owning that platform. And, I felt really strongly that the team was already so focused and stretched on what we already had to activate and execute on during the playoffs that I kind of took ownership of the production of those. So the process of going out and, reviewing the different rigs that are out there and what is the most affordable camera, what's a camera that can still scale for other needs of the organization, ultimately landing on a GoPro rig that was tied to a mold that could shoot 360 but was very dependent upon stitching. And anybody that's actually stitched video knows that there is no clean, easy way to do it. And then finding out about parallax and ghosting and, the depth that's needed to shoot. And these are all things that you don't know until you get into the weeds on producing this stuff. So, we were very candid with the expectations with Budweiser and saying, hey, this is beta for us, right? We're not experts in this space, but we are going to jump in and we have the hardware and the ability to create this content and you're going to come along for the ride. So
They were game.
They said, hey. Whatever we need to do, let's do it, right? And we're going to provide the viewers and you guys provide the content. So we did that. The first video we shot, first three videos we shot didn't work because there was no way to go back and successfully stitch them. There was no clean stitch. And I literally spent hours upon hours of sitting at the computer saying, why won't this stitch? And then finding the loopholes for the process, that's part of technology, right? And if you want to be at the bleeding edge of technology, you're going to have to account for that trial and error time and the amount of bandwidth that's needed in order to do that successfully so it does become public ready. We don't want to put out a product that is, half-baked to the public because they're going to see right through it right away. We have to put out a good product, especially if a brand like Budweiser is going to be on it. So took our bumps, three videos, had to throw those in the trash, and then we successfully learned from our mistakes and was able to go out and shoot the first one, which was our Q6 team, doing a drum roll there. Great video, got great engagement, and by the end of the playoffs, we had committed to doing four. We delivered almost 10 to Budweiser and over-delivered on that. So that was a huge success, but we're on to the next thing, all right? So what's the next hottest thing? Well, we're looking into bots now, artificial intelligence. How can that help customer service? How can that help sell tickets? Well, the decision trees that are associated with bots is like writing your whole own logic library in order to get that done, but it solves a problem for us. We have a huge problem where anytime there's an issue, our fans will go to social media and tweet our owner that, hey, there's an issue, right? And it's the process of communication and how the fans have become conditioned to do that almost kind of creates a conflict of interest within social. We don't want that conversation taking place on our channel. We want that taking place offline. So the focus on looking into bots is more about, okay, this is our central bank for any questions that you have around, what time is the game? Where do I park? What can I bring to the arena? Where's the handicap seating? All those things, baking that in. So, on demand, a fan now has the answer to what they want. But more importantly, how can we then turn that into an additional ticket purchase? Hey, would you like another ticket for the game? Because there's another seat that's open right by where you're sitting, and it's only $35. Yeah. Okay, well, just text yes, and we'll send you the ticket. We're trying to break down the barriers to make the process for our fans much easier, and technology is going to play a huge role in that.
So those two arenas, a lot of hype around bots and virtual reality.
What are your thoughts for the next, you know, year or two on both of those?
So VR is a really it's intriguing, but it's still very, very young, and I don't think it's where it needs to be quite yet. I think the cumbersome nature of the headsets needs to get much better. I know personally I can't have a headset on for more than 5 minutes without, like, all right, I need to kind of take a step back. Yeah. You know, I look at the amount of investment that is currently in the VR space, billions of dollars. It's not going to fail. They're going to figure a solution out that's going to work. How applicable that becomes to the entire set of society is a different story. Is it going to be a niche brand at the end of the day, or is it going to be something that is embraced by everybody? I think it has a space in sports because, you know, for us in basketball, the prize, you know, the prize is a courtside seat. If we put a VR 360 camera courtside and we're showing that game, now anybody can have a courtside seat that can see that from that perspective, right? And you know, what is the tolerance and how long we can stream that? And is it capable to do live streaming? You know, is the bandwidth available there? And more importantly, is the quality that is expected there? And I've seen, you know, talking with people like NextVR and Striver and these others that are in this space, you know, they're all really geeked out about it, but they're all kind of saying the same thing. We need to work together as an industry to make sure all the content that's going out is good. We're not competing against each other right now. We're trying to build the equity of the platform. So there is a great community of people that are providing some fantastic feedback and production tips to ensure the industry as a whole is able to progress. So with VR, I think there's a great, great future in it for how far that expands beyond, you know, gaming and sports, that's still a bit unknown. But I love the idea of the mixture between AR and VR. And then it's just a matter of finding the right hardware to make it become more seamless than it is now. Mm-hmm. So in regards to the bots, you know, I know if Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all these companies are investing heavily into them, there's... You know, you want to follow the kind of the coattails there. And there's already a lot of very successful brands that are using bots to improve their business. You know, 1-800-Flowers is a great example. They were one of the first early adopters of it, and they're seeing great results because of it. I've also seen a lot of bad bots, you know. So, I mean, how do you balance that out? If you want to jump in, what are the expectations? You know, sure, we can create a bot, but anybody can create a bot. How good is it? How effective is it? How many people are using it? What's the adoption like? And a lot of that is really where you have to kind of balance out the investment in that technology. Some cases, you got to take a risk. In a lot of cases, you got to take a risk to tell you the truth. But, you know, does that risk have great residuals that can pay off, you know, tenfold in the long run? Absolutely. So we're trying to be smart about it. We're also investing into additional resources to help us vet through all the vendors that are out there. 25, 30, you know, cold calls a day around, hey, I've got the next best technology that's going to change the world. Well, I can do that full time, you know, alone. So just helping trying to vet that out so we don't miss that next big opportunity has been really important.
Well, kudos for staying on the edge. And I know you guys not just have a great reputation within the NBA, but even outside North America, and you know, it's fascinating watching you guys, and kudos for really carrying that mantle in the digital space in sports.
Thanks for the kind words. You know, it's just I would expect anybody that has a great brand like the Cavs to do the same thing. You know, very, very fortunate in sports where you're dealing with avidity, loyalty, you know, right out of the gate, and so you can make mistakes. There is definitely a runway yes. where there and a tolerance from fans to fail. They'll still continue to come back. You know, they're still going to talk about the team. And what we need to be, you know, really careful about is: are we doing it just to do it, to say, hey, we're at the bleeding edge, or are we doing it to solve a problem? If we're doing it to solve a problem, you know what? The adoption will naturally follow, right? And that's kind of the mantra we try to take: and solve a problem, invest in the technology. If there are any additional benefits that fall outside of that, great. And then really it's about how do we expand the use of that technology in other areas throughout the organization.
Yeah, great conversation. Mike, thanks for coming in and sharing your thoughts with us.
10 more weeks, right? Jump back in.
Yeah, the season, as a matter of fact, we just got the first draft release of our schedule for next year that we're kind of going through with the NBA right now. So it's that's that. Oh, man, we're right around the corner from from the tip-off for the 16-17 season. And to tell you the truth, gentlemen, it feels like from 2014 till now, it's been one consistent season, you know, from LeBron coming back till now, but wouldn't trade it for anything.
Good. No good pressure for that. 2017.
Yeah. No, not at all. Just keep bleeding it through, right?
I think Cleveland as a whole, where do we go from here, right? You know, yeah. RNC, a championship, you know, Monsters won a championship, which is AHL. So all of the, you know, the bad juju that has been tied to Cleveland has now been lifted. And now we're this, you know, we've known it's been a jewel for a long time. Now the rest of the world is starting to figure out the moxie we have and pride and, you know, just the genuine nature of Clevelanders, and you know, very proud to be a part of it.
So that's it for Thundercast this week. As always, if you like what you heard, you can subscribe to our podcast at iTunes or Stitcher or wherever fine podcasts are sold. If you do us a favor on iTunes and give us a review, it would help us out. You can also go to thundertech.com/podcasts and listen to our entire library of podcasts that we've always done. So thanks for listening.